Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Hey, hey, the Net Live, once again in the house. Monday morning, as usual, we hope you're tuning in from work and not really getting any work done at all. It is the Net Live here from their live, the live court? The home court.
What was that?
Redondo Beach, California, the 30th of August, last weekend of August. I can't believe summer is gone already.
Gone. Your kids are getting ready for school.
Yeah, school next week. They told me, we don't have school. I go, yes, you do. It is time. Welcome into the Net Live. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you tuning in as always. Another big show coming for you today. We're trying to deliver the best in the world of volleyball, and we have a couple of really good ones coming on today. We'll talk a little bit about the Grand Prix. We'll talk about the women's college season, which is underway. We have the AVP fallout as it continues. Geeter and I have some thoughts on last week's interview with AVP owner Nick Lewin, some missed opportunities, and some other thoughts about what happened. We're going to be joined by a couple of good guests. Kevin Hambly, head coach of the Illini, University of Illinois.
Yeah, Kevin, a great young volleyball coach out there, just done a fantastic job. They're coming off two Sweet 16 performances in a row, so they got a great team coming back. I think three All-Americans. So.
And they're off to a good start so far this season, so we'll talk to Kevin about all that good stuff.
Mario Ciccinelli's coming on, the promoter from Cincinnati. Beach volleyball will be happening for the last time in the States in 2010. That's in Cincinnati this weekend.
I kept wanting to write AVP owner or AVP event.
I know.
And I got to write beach volleyball event.
I've been training myself.
So Mario Ciccinelli will join us, and then we will have Dave Reed of ESPN.com. He's going to come on and talk to us about Big Ten and Big 12 as part of our AVCA College Volleyball Weekly segment here during the show. We're also going to try and figure out a way to give away this setter's ball. I promoted it last week, and then we just kind of hung on to it. I had to work on my hands all week, so I couldn't be giving it away just yet.
We've had a lot going on the last couple of weeks. I want to know how many times you listened to our Nick Lewin interview.
Twice. I sat through it twice. And I think it's a story of missed opportunities for me. Really, one of the classic things they tell you when you're interviewing.
I felt the same way.
When you're interviewing, they tell you you have to know your questions, but then you have to listen to the answers so you know what was said and give a follow-up question if it's pertinent. And I thought that's where I really failed, is that there were some obvious follow-up questions that I just didn't ask. When he said he's involved in 20 other businesses, you go, okay, what other businesses is the obvious question? There was another moment in there. I forget what we asked. But there was another obvious question as a follow-up, just be nice and easy. What did I do? I'm looking at my sheet of paper at my next question and just sort of moving on. Not the best interview.
You and I talked about it a lot on the phone this week, and I listened to it a couple times myself, and I agree 100% from you. From my point of view, I felt like I absolutely fumbled on the follow-ups as well. I actually thought you did a really nice job,
Thank you.
To be honest with you. I know for me it was a weird situation to be in. He still owns the AVP. I wanted to give him a fair chance. I know him well, have a relationship with him, so I had my questions scripted, as did you, that we were going to go with, and I think when we weren't getting the answers that we maybe thought or some lengthier answers, we were just kind of like trying to get it going a little bit, and it was definitely difficult.
Yeah, he didn't give us a lot of information, so there wasn't a lot to go off of, and I missed some of what there was to go off of. Now, Reed, you guys remember Reed Pretty, right? Plays in the national team.
I think he used to be on the show.
Yeah, he used to be on the show once upon a time.
He owns it with you, I believe.
Yeah, now he's sort of an absentee owner. Maybe he runs 20 other businesses down in Orange County. I don't know. But he had some thoughts on it, so we'll be playing those later. We have a little 7-minute gig from Reed. So you get to hear his voice and hear about some of the stuff on the national team and his thoughts on the last couple of weeks here on the show. I think that'll be fun stuff. But, you know, listening to this, the interview, and then looking down our Facebook page, there was some really funny stuff going on the Facebook page. We had a question out there, and if you haven't become a fan yet, please do the Net Live on Facebook. Just search the Net Live, become a fan. And we had some great stuff. We post questions throughout the week, and the question was, tell us what you think Nick Lewin was doing when he put the show on hold.
There's some great answers.
Because during last weekend, week show, all of a sudden Nick Lewin goes, hold on, guys, and he puts us on hold for like 35 or 40 seconds. And we're searching around talking to Jason Olive and some other people. But there were some great answers because Matt Gardhoff said, same as Millie watching Curious George.
I thought that was really funny.
That was good. We had another one, changing his pants after Barney's questions.
Love that one.
Let's see, running another business.
Looking for toilet paper.
I liked the purchasing 100 great ideas for your 20 businesses on Amazon, which was a good one. Let's see, some of the others, let's see here. Waiting for his monkey to write the answers to the questions for him.
I believe he did tell Reed on a later phone call that he had to take that call because it was regarding the ABP. Is that true?
Didn't Reed I haven't heard that. I was too busy yelling at Reed.
Did you and Reed have it out this week, I have a feeling?
We had a rough conversation, yeah, about the whole Nick Lewin interview. Reed thought we didn't treat him appropriately. We didn't treat him like another guest and welcome him to the show. And I listened back to it, and I have to disagree there. Reed has his own thoughts on it. But there's a couple of other funny ones on there. David Cordes, thank you. Reading the next page of Radio Interviewing for Dummies. It's pretty good. So become a fan on Facebook if you haven't already. It's a good place to keep up with us during the week. And speaking of Matt Gardhoff, who we just quoted off there off our Facebook page, he has done a TNL, the NetLive promo, that is epic. Absolutely epic.
Very impressive.
It's on mattgardhoff.com, and it's a TNL promo, and you can click on it. It's embedded on his page, or we'll post it on the chat board. Can you throw that link up on the chat
board?
I'm
having trouble right now on the chat board. Like
Matt, if you're listening, usually he is. You can throw it up there on the chat board. It is one of the funniest things I've seen in recent memory, and I just want to know where he got the little Phil and Karch and
Sean Scott
figurines.
It was actually really impressive. He tweeted it to me during the week, and I was dying. And you hadn't seen it until this morning. You were trying to see it on your phone, and you couldn't, so we watched it together this morning. I thought it was genius. I really did.
It's something else. So thanks to Matt Gardhoff. Huge shout-out to you. That was really, really good stuff.
Really a lot happened this weekend in volleyball, too. The opening of the women's game. I actually went to an event in Chicago for the Barefoot Wine Championships. They still did this event, Kevin, and it was fantastic. It was Barefoot Wine, one of the AVP sponsors, sets up throughout the year leagues in different regions, and the champions of those regions get to come to an event at the end of the year, the AVP, and it's called the Barefoot Championships. They play a tournament, 24 men's teams, 24 women's teams. Barefoot flies them all out.
Awesome.
Puts them up at a hotel every day.
So once you qualify, you've won that prize
of
the weekend.
You then play in a qualifier, and the winners get into the main draw. Well, since there wasn't a main draw in Chicago, they flew out Carrie Walsh, Rachel Scott. They played together, and Phil and Todd, and I emceed it. And we actually could not do it in Chicago, so we went to Bradford Beach in Milwaukee, where they used to do the AVP. It hadn't been there since 1997, and it was phenomenal. I mean, it was a great event. I think we were all really, really appreciative of the fact that Barefoot stepped up, brought us out there first class, and just had this wonderful event. We took a yacht ride around the Lake Michigan on Friday night, and the players we had a great tournament, had a great crowd. And, you know, you realize that there are a lot of people out there that really care about volleyball. And we were in Milwaukee, and a guy who runs all the tournaments there for like 20 years, young guy named Todd Goronsky, he emceed with me, and he ran the tournament. And you could just see how appreciative he was that this was going on in his beach. And all his people were there and friends. And he and I actually talked about the Net Live. But they just had a great time. And you just go, this sport cannot die. There's too many good people involved that love it, and a lot of people have great ideas. You know, Scott Vandewerp, who's been calling the show from Michigan, he was there, you know, and it was just I think for what we've been through the last few weeks, it was a feel-good moment.
Nice. That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
It's nice that it's gone back the other direction. Did Phil and Todd play in the tournament?
Phil and Todd. So what happened? If you win, so Colin Caslow, Tim Wolliver, great players from Austin, Texas won. They got to play Phil and Todd. Now, they had played six matches and then had to play Phil and Todd. They were cramping, but they put on a phenomenal show with Phil playing defense. I mean, it was really fun. And then for the women, Kim McGibbon, who played at Santa Clara, and Petya Yanchalova, who actually was a two-time Olympian for Bulgaria. They won the women, so they got to play Rachel and Carrie.
Awesome.
It was really cool.
Was there prize money for the winners?
Yeah, they won like, they split $5,000, I think.
Really? And,
yeah.
And if they beat Phil and Todd, did they get a bonus?
Yeah, they weren't going to do that. They weren't going to win that. But what I said to the guys before, as I'm screaming at them for the intros, if you win this match, it'll be on YouTube forever. I mean, this is your moment.
Yeah, this is like the executive beating Jordan at his air camp.
Exactly.
Yeah,
3-2.
That would have been awesome. If they just got a lead, if they were up like 2-0, that would have been sick.
Yeah, it would have been. I mean, it was. It never got that point.
If you go 2-0, I think you just go George Costanza. You just go, all right, I'm out of here, and you walk off the court. You're done. You're leading 2-0. As far as you're concerned, you've won.
Yeah, but really, when I did the intros for Carrie and Rachel and I kind of turned around, you could see Todd almost emotional because this was happening on his beach and, you know, kind of a dream come true for a lot of those people that the best players in the world were there. And, you know, they had to work with Barefoot Wine. Barefoot Wine had to say, are we going to do this event still? In a matter, you know, when the AVP went under, they had a week to plan this event.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get the permits at Oak Street Beach. It was too much money. Couldn't do it at North Avenue. So in stepped Todd and his people in Milwaukee, and we got this done.
How well was it spectated?
You know what? It had a great little vibe to it. They had a bar and a restaurant right there, and that was completely full, like three levels. And then on the other side of the court, they moved it up like a Manhattan Open style like we just did. So everyone was basically right on the court. You know, there's 1,000 people there, 500
cool.
people. It's great.
Cool. Speaking of 1,000, I see that you got 1,000th Twitter follower. You're kind of popular.
I did. It was a big moment for me.
I had to play the song from Wicked.
Yeah, popular. I think I'm 1,002 now.
Yeah,
Geeter 3, get on there.
Nice. Yeah, if I was on Twitter, I'd follow you.
The Net Live's on there, isn't it? Or kind of good.
Yeah, me personally, kind of good's on there. The Net Live's on there. There's some tweeting going on.
Yeah.
But what the. Get back
there's no like at Kevin Barnett.
I don't think we
at
have
Barney.
A thousand. I definitely don't have
Barney.
A thousand followers.
You should be at
no.
I'm a Barney.
Somehow, I think I'll pass on that one. So Florida beat Nebraska.
I watched that last night in Nebraska. Eric Sullivan, good friend of the show,
yeah,
actually called in last week, like right before Nick Lewin and Dan got pissed. He 2 weeks ago with Hodel, I believe, assistant coach. They were at home, ranked number 2 in the country.
Right.
And
the return of the prodigal daughter.
Yes.
Lauren Cook leaves UCLA after a stellar freshman season.
The two big 6'5 kids, a lot of publicized stuff about that.
Right.
They're big, and they're down 2-0, and Florida has 4 match points in the third. Nebraska ends up winning the third, I believe like 31-29 or something, and crush them in the fourth. Up 11-7 in the fifth, Nebraska 6 errors in a row. Basically hitting out, you know, got roofed, and end up losing
15-13. Brutal.
Good win for Florida. I mean, Florida went back-to-back wins. They beat Iowa State, who was ninth, and they beat Nebraska, who was ranked second. So, you know, Florida at number 13 is definitely going to move up.
Yeah, that's some exciting stuff. So the women's NCAA championship is on the way. Season is underway. We will be talking to Dave Reed later today. Looking forward to that. And let's keep with the women here and stay with the international game. The women for the USA women took down Grand Prix this past week in an unbelievable performance.
Is that ahead of schedule? I mean, you're impressed, right?
Absolutely.
Because we've been talking about their progression on this show, and you've been the one that has been watching them and doing their games, and you've been getting more and more excited, it seems like, every single week.
The first weekend was rough. They had their very first weekend in Gdynia, Poland. They opened up with a loss to Poland, a loss to Germany, and I'm trying to think of who the other team was. It seems so long ago now. But they really did not play well at all. Even in the win that they had, they did not play very well. Second weekend, went on to Hong Kong, and it was a complete turnaround. Logan Thom joined the team, and I know in the broadcast we made a lot of Logan Thom's addition and the way that she plays. It's not so much what she does on the stat sheet. It's what Logan Thom does to take pressure off other people. So as soon as Logan Thom came back and you put Stacey Sikora in there, those two passing took the pressure off Jordan Larson passing. And it put Megan Hodge on the bench. And Megan Hodge had been victimized the weekend before. They were just serving the heck out of her. She's shanking everywhere and not really able to kill high balls. So Jordan Larson becomes more comfortable. Logan Thom plays her style of game. And Destiny Hooker in the opposite position.
She's the real deal.
Oh, my goodness. She has played exceptionally. Every single time out, she's gotten better.
Remember how well she played in the national championship game?
She was amazing.
Penn State?
Yeah.
What do you think that did for her? I mean, she was always kind of in the shadow of Megan. And she really played the game of her life at the biggest moment. I always wonder if she was just at that point finally starting to really get it.
Maybe. It could be because the way she's played on the national team. I think she's definitely a lot further along than Megan is at this point. Now, that's opposite to when I talked to Hugh McCutchen before the tournament started, and he said, yeah, Megan is a lot further along than Destiny as far as a volleyball player.
Maybe Destiny's just a big-time gamer.
But it's the position they play, too. So to play outside hitter at the international level is a lot more difficult than to play the opposite.
Absolutely.
For the whole game. I mean, obviously the hitting from the opposite position is more difficult, but it's one skill. If you're playing outside hitter, you have to pass, you have to transition into hitting, you have to get back and play more defense in the middle back.
Blocking assignments are different and pretty difficult as well. You get your bunch block and you're helping that middle big time and getting out to the right side attack on the other team. That's not an easy blocking position as well.
Absolutely. And people think if you play in the NCAA here and you play really well, you're player of the year like Megan Hodge, and you're on Penn State and you have all that success, you're going to transition right into the international game. Sorry, folks, not true. It turns out that your game in NCAA is not so great compared to the rest of the world. So these women stepped up, and Destiny really has done a great job at the opposite position of getting her feet to the ball, being more technically sound, reaching and utilizing that big jump she has. She's been over the top with heat. That's the key. And Megan, on the other hand, she doesn't have a very good arm swing. She does not have a big arm swing and really doesn't make huge contact with the ball. She snaps the ball over the top and kind of rolls it here and there. And while she gets up high and she can go over occasionally, that works in college because nobody can defend. Sorry, in the international game, you're going to have to do something more than hit a roll shot over the top of the block.
Where's Kim Glass?
Haven't seen her. I heard she's injured. Coming back from injury, that would be another nice addition.
How did Glass set, the rookie out of Penn State?
Alicia, the first weekend was terrible. But it's because she had her track shoes on. The team couldn't pass.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was really indicative of what she can do. Since then, she's really played well. She played very well, and in the final round, she's actually named best setter.
Which is a huge accomplishment, especially for someone in the first major competition at that level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Huge honor, and she did a great job. She made some nice choices. One of the things she started doing that I thought was really good is that she started making the easy set. She wasn't trying to outthink the opponent, jacking the ball across the floor all the
Located
time.
Located well.
Located well. Make an easy set. Make an easy play. Put it up to the pipe if you're pushed over. Put it up to the D if you're pushed all the way outside that right side. She made some easy, nice sets. In the middle, I want her to go to the middle more. She stopped going to the middle a lot. And with Akinrodowo, who was named best blocker of the tournament, and with Bowen, both of them offensively are very good. And Akinrodowo in particular, when the ball is set high enough for her, it doesn't matter if the block read it or not, she's going over the top.
For 4 years at Stanford, it was the same thing. When that ball was put in the right spot and attackable for her, she put it away.
Yeah, every time. Over the block. I watched her just this past, actually yesterday, a couple of matches. And she's just going OT every single time. Destroyed Poland, or beat Poland, and then destroyed Italy. 3-0 over Italy. This is world number two Italy, and the women tore them up 3-0. It really made Italy look bad. I think it was 14 in the last set. And just a great performance from Feluca. Lots of stuff blocks. She had 7 stuff blocks and 7 kills. Hit like 500. Really nice performance.
And Glass didn't come out the whole tournament? She set every ball?
She set basically every ball. There was some double sub going on. There was one sub at one point with Nellie Spicer. But no, Glass set basically the entire time.
What can this do for a young team? I mean, you start believing, right?
Confidence. That's the issue. I mean, the volleyball is here and there, but the confidence issue. And I thought that was one of the things with the men's team and their run-up through 08. When they won World League, which is essentially the same tournament on the men's side, when they won World League in 2008, about 10 days before the Olympics started, that was a confidence booster. I already knew, and I think people who watched them already knew they were among the world's elite. They were right there with Brazil and Russia. But as soon as they won that tournament, the mentality changed, and they came into the Olympics with a swagger that they hadn't had before.
Being on the beach side and so immersed in that, I remember the talk amongst the volleyball community when they won that tournament. And I went into the Olympics thinking, wow, our men have a real chance here. And they kept winning games in pool, and you kept going, wow, this team is just peaking at the right time.
Yeah, they went undefeated.
Undefeated.
And they won a couple of unbelievable 5-game matches.
Yeah.
5-set matches, and just remarkable. I remember the Russia match. Dave Lee scores 4 of the last 5 points, a couple of huge stuff blocks, and it ends. And it was like that moment with the Rams and the Titans in the Super Bowl years ago, I think it was 99, where the last play happened, the guy got tackled.
About the 2-yard line, 1-yard line?
Yeah, the 1-yard line, and you went, is that it? That really was the last play? Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's like a
scene
out of Friday Night Lights. It could only be scripted.
Absolutely. And David Lee stuffed the ball, and you saw the Russian libero laying there, Verbov on the ground in despair, and you thought, it's over?
How did that happen?
It was amazing. And those were the two best teams in the tournament. If you have an opportunity to go back and find that match, United States versus Russia in 2008, the volleyball is spectacular. And really, it's on feature, the two best teams in the world at that particular moment. So congratulations to the women for winning Grand Prix. That is a huge deal. They take home a big check. It looked like $200,000 in the check that they had there. And really a great job by Hugh McCutcheon and Karch Karai. They have a lot more to do. They know that. But it was really a nice performance. They had a victory over Brazil, 3-2, world number one, in that final round.
We're going to have to get Hugh on here soon. You know that.
I want Hugh next week. We're going to see if we can get him in here.
I want Todd Rogers.
What's been going on?
Your buddy Jen Kessie's back in town. I know you want to get her. There's a lot. We have a list of people we got to get on this show.
You know what's funny is her coach friended me on Facebook.
Jeff Conover friended me on Facebook. Cal State Northridge.
And he said, I've been listening to the show for a long time. Love it. Keep it up. Something like that. And I thought, he's been listening to the show for a long time. So he knows about the Kessie Barnett thing. He's got to be getting back to her. She's got to know about that. Maybe that's why we can't get her on the show.
No, she has told me she's ready to come on the show. She's just always flying somewhere, usually to France.
Sounds nice. So, good stuff from all around the world of volleyball. I look forward to talking to the women about that event and talking to you. I still haven't done the final. I have to do the last three matches this week.
I know we're going to have some callers today. There's been some talk on the Volley Talk chat board about some of the legendary message board.
Trolls.
Good way to put it.
I guess you could be a good troll.
Yeah.
So
just people that have, have some really funny stuff over the years to say, whether it's been critical or complimentary. And so there's been some talk, so you never know. People will be calling in hopefully today. There's been a lot of activity, although we're only up to 50 people on our chat board. We were at 132, then 89, now 50. What's happening? Are you and I losing it?
We're bringing down the show. Dan Madden's gone. The show is
people are downloading
down.
It, though. People are listening to it. Jake Gibb, maybe 5 days after the last Net Live, was texting me about the Nick Lewin interview.
Nice. 347-677-1525 if you want to get in the show. I want you guys to call in today and give us a take on last week's Nick Lewin, because this is where Reed and I are having a big disagreement about how we treated him. Did we treat him well? Did we not treat him well? Give us a call. Let us know. Hey, we got somebody in the queue right now. 615. That was quick. I like that. 615, welcome to the show from San Diego. You're on the air.
What's up, boys?
Oh, it's not San Diego. What am I thinking? 619.
615 is Nashville, baby.
It's Nashville. Brandon Rosenthal, welcome back to the show. What do you have to say for yourself? How did your first weekend go with the Lipscomb Lady Bisons?
Weekend went well. We traveled to Omaha and took on Kansas. Lost a tough one in four, and then beat Creighton in four, and then beat San Francisco in four. So it was a good weekend. Alex, intern Alex, put up huge numbers.
Nice.
Good to hear. Hey, Brandon, I was in Milwaukee this past weekend and met some great people from Nashville, and a lot of the talk at that Barefoot Wine Championships tournament that I was at, was that there's great volleyball in Nashville, beach volleyball. They have some great facilities, and I was excited to hear that.
Yeah, there's one guy, his name's Roman. He's got Nashville Beach, and I have not been out there, but everybody I've talked to said his courts are really nice, white sand courts, I assume from the beaches of the Gulf of, the Florida Gulf.
Before the oil.
I think they had to pay extra for the tar balls to be shipped in. To be truly authentic.
So intern Alex is killing it. Is that credit to CrossFit out here? Do we have to give props where they're due?
As her coach, I will say this. I've been very pleased with her physical ability due to CrossFit. So I guess that's a glowing recommendation.
All right, CrossFit South Bay. One of the people.
Yeah, very, very pleased. I said something that I wouldn't mind sending my whole team out there next summer.
Real quick, Brandon, what did you think of the interview last week?
You know, I thought it was good.
All right.
Which one are you talking about?
Nick Lewin.
Nick Lewin, the AVP owner. Did you hear that one?
Yes, I did. You know, I think it's important that you guys get to the source, you know, and ultimately people need to start answering questions. So I think you guys are doing what you need to be doing.
You feel like he answered any questions?
I think there's more to be answered, and I think it's interesting in his position that they really haven't come forth with what I think all the information is out there.
All right, Brandon, give us who you're playing this weekend, and then we got to go to break.
No problem. We go to Pittsburgh and take on the Boilermakers of Purdue, then Tulane, who just got beat by Pepperdine, and then take on Pitt in our final match.
Awesome. Well, thanks for checking in. Good luck the rest of the week.
Thanks, you guys. Keep up the great work.
All right, Brandon Rosenthal, head coach, Lipscomb University. One of the all-time friends of the show. Been calling the show forever.
He has. And he sent us intern Alex. Yeah, Tulane had a rough go this week. That was a tough tournament. Stanford, Pepperdine, New Mexico, and Tulane.
That's rough.
Yeah, it's not easy out of the gate right there.
No. But hey, you start your season like that, then you have some place to go.
Kevin Hambly has a tough schedule. We're going to talk to him about that.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. Speaking of starting the season pretty tough, we started with a D4 scrimmage against the Sharks with the flag football team yesterday.
How'd you do in the scrimmage?
We did okay. There was a kid on the other side who apparently was kicked out of the league last year for violence. And
How old is he?
He should be kicked out of the league again this year for violence. He ended the scrimmage by choke slamming one of our running backs. Literally, like, getting blocked past the running back.
Go up to his dad.
Hooked him around the neck and slammed him to the ground.
Tell him, Redondo Seahawks, go play Pop Warner.
Yeah, he needs to find somewhere to go. But we'll see how the Eagles do this year.
And hey, then say, you hack. Always end it with you hack.
You know what? We got another caller, 414. You know where 414 is from?
I don't.
Well, we're going to take that before we go to break here. 414, welcome to Net Live. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
Todd Goronsky, Bradford Beach.
Nice!
I was talking about him earlier.
Yeah, Todd, thanks for calling the show.
What's up, Peter?
Todd, your ears burning?
I was listening, and it's much props to you, Geeter. It was awesome to have you at Bradford Beach. It was an honor.
It was a lot of fun, man. You guys did a great job.
Todd, tell us about the organization process there, and does that have any legs for the future for next year?
Well, as I was telling Geeter and everybody else that was out, I kind of have a rare situation where I have a 10-year lease with Milwaukee County to operate the largest public beach in the state of Wisconsin. So we control all the events, all sponsorship, leagues, just everything, and a lot of it's built around beach volleyball. So the next step in the process is that we'll be looking to host more major professional and grassroots events leading up to the Olympics. And I have the backing of the corporate community in Milwaukee to make that happen.
Very nice. So you're selling independent sponsorships. Has that been an easy sell or a tough sell for an event like beach volleyball?
Any sponsorship to sell is hard. But what we've been able to do is create this destination point, and we've brought so many different types of people down there, and this past weekend was literally like a culmination of all those things coming together on a perfect day, and the people that were in the crowd that day, many, many people that are decision makers at our county government and also in our private sector, what they saw, they loved. So now it's on, you know, getting phone calls yesterday and today saying, what more can we do? And so I know I talked to Todd Rogers a little bit about what he thought of the event. And, you know, there's going to be a bid process for things, but I'm sure we'll work it out. We've been able to get a lot done at Bradford Beach without the AVP being there. So having them come aboard is, I don't think we'll have any trouble getting over the hump.
Todd, one last question. How big would the bonus have been if someone was able to defeat the professional team? You got to put up like a monster prize money for that, like winning a car or something. Don't you get somebody to underwrite that?
You know, Geeter and I were sitting there watching the women's match, and, you know, the Petia is a baller. She, you know, it wasn't exact. Those games were not blowouts by any means. You know, and what he was saying before with Williver and Caswell, I mean, those guys played some really, really hard matches all day. And, you know, so those games weren't that great, but the girls, those two can play. So that would have been something if they'd have took it. The first game, I think, was like 19, so
Yeah, they were up 18-11, and then it got to like 18-17.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice stuff. Well, I want it to be next year like the old serve the ball game. If you can serve it in the window, which the volleyball would just fit through, you win like the truck. That should be, if you beat Phil and Todd, you should win a truck.
That'd be really funny.
Somebody will put up the money for that, take out an insurance policy.
Hey, Todd, great job this weekend, man. Thanks for all
the time. Thanks a lot for everything you guys are doing. We'll get the word out back here in the Midwest, and volleyball is definitely alive.
Yeah, awesome.
Thanks,
Todd.
We need Milwaukee.
Thanks,
guys. All right, good stuff right there from Todd. I'd like to hear that. Let's go to break here. We'll take a short break. I know we have another caller in the queue. We will get to you in just a moment. Thanks for being here on The Net Live. We'll
Kevin Hambley.
Kevin Hambley coming up after the break. See you soon. About the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan?
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench, sub yourself in, pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
VolleyballNetwork.com Monday morning. Thanks for tuning in and being here. It's been a fun start to the show. Had a good time. We've had a couple of nice calls. We had Todd from, what's the name of the beach back there in Milwaukee?
Bradford Beach.
Bradford Beach in Milwaukee, where there was a Barefoot Wines tournament this past weekend. Talked a little bit about the Nick Lewin interview last week. And if you are out there with an opinion, get on our Facebook page and throw it up there, because we had some fun stuff coming off the Facebook page. Coming up still, we have head coach of the Fighting Illini, University of Illinois, Kevin Hambley, and Mario Ciccinelli, promoter of the Cincy Beach Volleyball Tournament. Almost said AVP Cincinnati again. Cincy Tournament coming up, along with the American Volleyball Coaches Association College Volleyball Weekly. We've got Dave Reed this week, Big Ten, Big 12.
You know one thing about Kevin Hambley? He's one of those guys. I said it about Mike Seeley. I said it about Jared Elliott when he got the job at Texas. I said it about Wally when he got the job at Santa Clara. They're stars in the game. They're going to be coaching stars, and he is one.
Okay.
I don't say that about everybody, Kevin. And I apologize to those of you out there that I don't say it about, but I definitely say it about Kevin.
I think Hambley's experience is what really defines him as a coach, is that he's been from the top to the bottom. He's been at UNLV, started quite a few different programs there for men and for women, moved on to the national team, a lot of different stuff like that. I thought we had him in the queue, but I think we just lost him, dude. Let me just fade it out of the queue. I've got a 631 number in the queue. But Hambley's been a lot of different places, trained with the national team for a bit of time, was an All-American player, and coached the national team on the women's side, and then moved on to the Illini. He's really done some great stuff. Let's take another quick caller while we're hanging in here for just a second. 631, welcome to the Net Live. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. My name is Mike. I'm from New York, and I have a question about beach balls.
Okay.
Obviously, over the last number of years, obviously the AVP ball has been the dominant ball that everyone's chosen to play with. What do you guys think is going to happen?
All right. I like that question, Mike. Yeah, I think what's going to happen is people are just going to choose here and there. And whatever beach tour comes back, we see a scramble. We see a scramble by Wilson, by Spalding, by Mikasa. We'll see a bunch of different companies, I hope, looking for that space and perhaps putting a little more money into the sport and the ball.
The guys from Wilson were at the tournament this weekend at the event, went to dinner with us, and they have a lot of love for the AVP and still feel like it will come back in some form. And, you know, for them, they have a big vested interest in it and have been a huge supporter of us for many years. So you can guarantee that Wilson's going to be pushing that AVP ball. And then if we come back with a different name, come out with a new ball.
I've heard a lot of complaining one way or the other about the Spalding. You know, the old Spalding is too heavy. It's got too many panels. It moves too much. The new ones, remember when the Mikasas came out, the new FIVB ball, years ago when the FIVB started the beach, that ball was like a ping pong ball or a balloon. It would just float too much. Now they've kind of changed that ball around. So I think it all comes down to sponsorship dollars. Mike, thanks very much for the question. We appreciate you calling in and being part of the show. Good stuff. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we want to welcome in our first guest here to the Net Live. It's a gentleman who was a two-time or three-time All-American at BYU and played a season in France and then embarked on a coaching career, first at UNLV, then 4 years with the national team, onto a professional season there with the Minnesota Chill of the now-defunct league, unfortunately, but now has been at University of Illinois since 2004 as an assistant, now entering his second season as the head coach. Welcome into the show, Kevin Hambley, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin and Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you being here. Kevin, we know you just opened up with a victory in the Illini Classic. Your team went 3-0 for the first weekend. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we started out pretty shaky, to be honest. I think our team was trying to go to a Final Four, win a national championship on one swing. They just were really impatient, but kind of steadied out and figured out how we want to play. And, you know, we beat BYU, South Carolina, and Middle Tennessee State. And anyone who hasn't seen Middle Tennessee State, that they're worth watching. They got a bunch of real fine athletes, and they run a crazy fast offense. I've never seen anything like it. They get to the ball out to the pin in less than a second, and they present a bunch of challenges for us. So we're pretty happy with the result. Would like to play a little bit smoother, hoping that we'll take care of that. We'll need it because we're playing Jarrett's team out in Texas next, so they're going to present some different challenges for us as well.
Kevin, you led me right to my first question about the schedule. You're at Texas next week.
Yeah.
The following week, you're at Nebraska, and you're also going to play Dayton, who's in the top 25. Then
yeah.
You're going to play Reed Sudahara's Cincy team, and then you go into the grueling Big Ten schedule. Why did you schedule such a tough road in the beginning?
Well, we thought we'd have a good team, and we wanted to see what we were about. There's a line in Fight Club that I love, and it says, you don't know anything about yourself until you're in a fight. And I kind of feel like that for us, that if we played a patsy schedule, we won't learn enough about ourselves. And so, playing, going to Texas and going to Nebraska and playing those guys is huge for us. And the thing that's, I think, neither of those teams are coming back to us. It's just about us trying to get ready to play that, to play the Big Ten schedule. Because the Big Ten this year is going to be brutal. And it doesn't get any easier next year, of course, with Nebraska joining. But we want to know who we are going into the Big Ten.
That's going to be a great test for you guys. I don't know if you've been to Texas yet, but a couple years ago I went and watched a game and did a game for CSTV. It is a great atmosphere there, and it'll probably be sold out to watch you guys.
I hope so. Yeah, that's what we were hoping for, to get out there and let's see if we're tough enough to handle, because Penn State, when we play them, they're going to be a great team. They're going to have 4,000 people there, the same as Minnesota. So we need to, it'll be the first one of those kind of tests for us. So I'm hoping it's a great environment. I hear it's amazing, and the place is knowledgeable, and they're loud, and our team's excited for the challenge, and I'm excited to see how we respond.
Kevin, talk about the expectations and some of the goals you've set for this team coming off two straight Sweet 16 performances.
Yeah, we unfortunately, we would have liked to have gone farther last year than the Sweet 16. We had goals higher than that, and we came in as a number 5 seed and then played the number 12 seed, but it just happened that they were the third-ranked team in the country. And we got in a dogfight with those guys and had swings to go up 2-1, and we didn't pull it off. So we were really, really disappointed last year how it ended. You know, I think going into the year itself was good until we got into that match against Hawaii, not because we lost to Hawaii, because they were a very good team and deserved to go to the Final Four, and they played better than us in that match. But just overall, we were hoping that we could have went a little bit further in the tournament and kept advancing. So our first goal is first to get in the tournament and then try to advance a little bit further, you know, at least to that Final Eight match, and who knows, hopefully beyond that.
What about beat Penn State?
You know, that's our goal more is to win the Big Ten than it is to beat Penn State, because we don't. You know, the Big Ten is such a grind. What good would it do to beat Penn State and, like, kind of give everything we have on that match and go nuts and get, you know, super fired up and then lose to Ohio State the next night, which is totally possible. We're looking more to be consistently good and beat them over 20 matches and beat Minnesota over 20 matches, because they're going to be extremely tough, and Ohio State's going to be tough, and Michigan State. I mean, we have a lot of really good teams in the Big Ten. We want to be good over time, and so we're not going to look to just – our goal isn't necessarily to just beat Penn State in that match. Certainly, we're going to give everything we can in that match, but our goal is to be really good and try to win the Big Ten.
Hey, Barney, those are head coach answers.
Yeah. I went to head coaching class. I went to head coaching class to learn how to answer those things, you know.
You're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to head coach Kevin Hambly from the Fighting Illini. Kevin, you mentioned the playoff seeding and the way that whole thing shakes out. Do you think that your tough schedule will in any way affect your ability to get a higher seed come playoff time?
Well, you know, we get the benefit of being in the Big Ten, and if you're one of the top three teams in the Big Ten, historically, you're going to be somewhere in the top 8 seeds, you know, and that's kind of where you want to be. So, to be honest, that wasn't our motivation for playing that tough pre-conference schedule. It was much more about getting us ready for the Big Ten to try to make a run at that. But certainly it's not going to hurt to go, you know, to go on the road. It never hurts your RPI to go on the road and play a really tough opponent. So, I think it has to help us with the seed later on. But that wasn't our motivation for scheduling that way.
Given the success of your team with the consecutive Sweet 16s and the high expectations, how's the fan support there at University of Illinois?
It's over the top right now. It's great. I mean, everyone's bought in. From, you know, we had the president of the school came to watch us play this last match and came up and introduced himself and all that. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of buzz here. Unfortunately, our football team, there's not a lot around that, and so our soccer team's doing pretty well. But because we're ranked as high as we are in those expectations, we're getting a ton of attention, and I'm hoping we can live up to those expectations. You know, if we do, then maybe we'll create a fan base, something like you're talking about with Texas. I mean, we have great fans, but we haven't been able to consistently sell out the gym. And, you know, that's our goal, and we're hoping for that. And so if you're winning Big Ten titles, then that's when those things happen. And if you're winning big matches, then people start to show up. And so we got to take care of business on the court. But the expectations are there, and the place is ready to explode. If we start winning, and then I know that not only will we get the support on the radio and TV and in the newspapers here, but we'll start to sell the place out, and it'll be even more of an exciting environment in Huff Hall, which is our gym.
Kevin, tell us a little bit about some of the players on your team. You got Laura DeBruyler, who's a 2-time All-American, Hillary Hain, an All-American setter. Such a great combination of young players with veterans, kind of like the perfect storm for you guys.
Yeah, I really like our senior leadership. You mentioned Hillary Hain is All-American. We also have Joe Banger, who is an All-American, and Laura DeBruyler, and they've played every second they've been here, basically. They've been on the floor for 4 years, and so they're tremendous leaders. If you haven't seen Laura play, she's a really fun player to watch because she's 5'10", you know, doesn't look like much, but she's just got a live, electric arm, and she gets off the floor fast, and she can float around and do some things and hit some balls that you just don't see that often. Really good out of the back row, and really good on defense. She's a fun kid to watch. And then Johanna Bangert's a 6-foot middle, and she's trying to lead the country in blocking 3 times in a row this year. She led the last 2 years in blocking, and she says she's 6 foot. She's probably 5'11", Just has really good eyes, sees things really well. There's a nice read blocker. You know, we're kind of in a bunch read system, and so she does a really nice job of doing that. And then Hillary's just a leader, and she's a winner. And so those three guys are. I feel good about this team because they're leading this group. You know, then we had a transfer in Colleen Ward from Florida, and she I think she hit 300 for the weekend, and she had eight aces in a stretch. Her jump serve, she just kind of took over the match against BYU with her jump serve, and so she's added a lot. We have a kid, Michelle Barch, who has been injured beginning of this year and hasn't really caught her stride, but she's a 6'4", devastating block on the right side and has potential to be a tremendous attacker. And those two guys are juniors. And then we got a kid, Aaron Johnson, who's starting to come into her own as a middle, who's a sophomore. But, you know, the girl that I'm really excited about is your girl, is J-Bo, Jen Bonilla, who's our libero. I think we just look at her numbers. She passed a 2.57 and was 68% perfect, and she's just a stud passer for us right now. And she's going to be a special libero. I'm really excited about her. And we got some nice young other players that have come in with Anna Dorn, who's a highly rated recruit, great athlete, touches 10.7, and your other girl within Jasmine, who got some time this weekend for us, and she's learned the college game, but she's going to be a nice player for us here as well. So really excited about, you're right, I like what you're saying about being old and young. We got a good mix, and I'm hoping that the older players teach the younger players what college game's about, and it seems to be going that direction.
Kevin, I mentioned your playing career, but I think I left you a little bit underserved. I wonder if any of your players know about the time that you spent on the women's national team, because you're the best women to suit up.
Yeah, I was definitely in the best shape of my life doing that. I was just trying to be a Cuban, you know. Those guys are way more athletic than I ever was. So there were some beasts on the women's side. Compared to our opponents, I was probably in the 50 percentile as far as a volleyball player compared to those guys.
Well, explain what you were doing on the national team, and then give me your thoughts on the idea of women, you know, bringing men in to play against them, and have you ever done that with any of your women's teams?
Yeah, the thought is that, you know, I think it's a challenge for the men's side. How do you overload them or do things that are above what the men's side is? Like, how do you simulate the jump serves that the men's side sees? It's impossible, because if a player is able to hit the jump serve as hard as Clay Stanley can hit it, then they're on your team. And on the women's side, you know, we're fortunate because you can get some guys in that can do things, hit the ball a little bit harder, or hit the ball at a different angle, or recreate some of the top players in the world in your gym. And that's basically what I did every day. I watched tape of Artemanova, and I watched of her on the left side, and I tried to simulate that every day in practice. And then I would watch tape of Nancy Carrillo, who was the best server by far, this Cuban middle blocker who just hit it at 60 miles an hour. I mean, she was rivaling men's jump serves, and I'd go back and had to learn how to hit a jump serve that hard. I mean, I was just trying to overload them a little bit. So, yes, and the question, to answer your second question, do we do that in our gym? We do all the time. We have male practice players. We have three of them that come in and bomb jump serves against us and hit the ball harder than what we see, you know, with the exception of Penn State the last few years. I don't know if any of our girls hit the ball as hard as Fawcett did, but they try. And so I think it's important we try to take advantage of that, having some guys that can simulate some things but also kind of hit balls harder than they're going to see in a match, and then things start to slow down when you actually get in the match against, you know, women on both sides of the net. So I think it's served us well. I think it's helped prepare us for Penn State's and for Minnesota's and those kind of teams that have real physical presence. And, you know, we're getting ready for Texas right now. We're going to have some girls trying to trying to simulate Fawcett and how hard she hits the ball. I mean, she brings it harder than most kids in college.
Kevin, this may be a preview of possibly a regional final coming up this weekend. Put on your coach's hat. What do you know about Texas, and what are going to be the keys for you guys?
Well, I know, you know, we just started watching video. We just got all the video in today. So what I know about Texas is that they are probably the most athletic team in the country right now. And, you know, as far as they're going to have, I like their young setter, and Allison. She's going to do a nice job moving the ball around. Fawcett on the outside is just a beast. I mean, she brings a ton of heat and has some game, and she's been steadily improving over time. Rachel Adams is a phenomenal middle blocker that can take over at times. You know, I know they lost Bailey, but I saw that they moved the kid from San Diego, the right side. They moved her to the right side, and they're going to physically they're going to be as good as anyone in the country, and athletically they're probably way beyond anyone else. And so they're going to present a whole different set of challenges, and then they're going to have the crowd on their side. I mean, as far as tactics and what we have to do, we're going to have to figure that out this week. But physically, we're just hoping that we can do some things with our serve and do some things with our defense to hopefully combat some of that. And what those are, we're going to need a little bit more time. Sorry, I wish I had a better answer for you.
No, that's fantastic, Kevin. How great is it for you to have a couple kids come in that just won the national championship at JOs just with really great coaches?
Well, you know, we're just asking. We're just trying to say, hey, with these coaches, what did you learn from these guys? Just tell us, please tell us, because we really don't know what we're doing. We need to learn from Chris and yeah.
Coley. Give him the credit right now.
Yeah.
Coaching clinic.
I just have to say, Kevin Wilt was a great supporter of our club, Jasmine Orozco and Jim Bonilla. But every tournament he was at, he watched us, and we appreciated his support all year. And this is a little bit of fact about Kevin Hambly. The first time I ever saw him was not when Northridge played BYU, but I was a 19-year-old just on my freshman year in Northridge, assistant coach at my old high school, Crespi, and we played Royal High School in the semifinals of CIF, and we got smashed.
By me? No, it wasn't me. I was just kind of spraying balls all over the place. I had no idea what I was doing. But you guys never recruited me at Cal State Northridge. Otherwise, I wanted to be a Matador. Got to talk to John Price about that.
Wow, you really went the other direction, didn't you? You wanted to be a Matador, but you went to BYU.
Yeah. Well, no one else would take me, so that's my only choice. The only choice I had. So
you went from hell to BYU. Right there. That's...
What was that?
Devil or live with God? I mean, it
was... Yeah. Well, I enjoyed hanging out with the Matadors, though, and they certainly when they came to town to BYU, they left a mark. There's no question about that.
Well, Kevin Hambly, we appreciate you joining us here on the Net Live, and wish you all the best here on your next season, your second season with the Fighting Illini.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on, and good luck to you guys. I enjoy your show.
Kevin,
listen to it on podcast.
Yeah, thanks, bud. We'll get back to you
very
later.
Very good.
All right, man. Thanks, you guys.
See ya.
Thanks, Kevin. Great job by him.
Yeah, good stuff. He crushed it.
Yeah,
he would.
He's a good guy, man. And you know what? He was a great player. And I am actually pissed at John Price.
For not recruiting him?
Yeah, you know, Goody was an All-American.
Yeah, I was an All-American. You know when John Price called me?
After your career was over?
10 days after I signed with Pepperdine. He's like, oh, we want to talk to you. I'm like, hey, dude, I've been on the market for like 6 months.
Truth be told, John Price was a great recruiter.
Was he?
Yes, absolutely.
For volleyball or partying?
Both. He comboed him.
Got to bring in both skills. I thought Kevin had some great stuff to say just about his philosophies on coaching and scouting, and you hear the thoughtfulness, and you hear it's no accident that when we talk to these great coaches, you hear the same things over and over, and the focus on process and long-term thinking and finding out about your team and learning about your team and stuff like that.
Newsflash of the Big Ten, a lot of the Midwest kids now are going to look at Illinois because they are back. They've been in the Sweet 16 twice. He's a great young coach. And those kids from Chicago, you know, Sports Performance Club that used to go other places, they're now going to take a look at their hometown team.
And he's far enough south that you can get out of the weather.
And he recruits from the West Coast now. That's something that Jared did a great job at Texas as well. You know, just because they move away, they have SoCal roots. They come back here, and they can recruit here.
Yeah. Geeta, what else you got? You got something? I got something to do here on the computer. Figure out something to say.
Casey Jennings and Kevin Wong won the FIVB gold medal match in Holland this weekend. Very impressive, and let me tell you why. They lost in the qualifier, I don't know, 16-14 in the third. A couple teams dropped out, so they call it the lucky losers.
Yeah.
Two out of the top three qualifier teams were going to get into the main draw. They drew out of a hat. First guys get picked. It's not Casey and Kevin. It comes down to the final two. Pedro Salgado from Brazil reaches in the hat, picks out his good friend Casey and Kevin Wong. They get into the tournament. They go undefeated and win it. The first time ever a lucky loser has gone through. And they played Furbringer Lucena in the semifinals. It's 23-22, and there's a huge storm, and no one's on the beach. They serve. They get a roof. They win. They found out in the players' tent that if those guys had sided out, they were going to stop that match and start it over the next day.
Oh, my God.
So they go to the finals the next day playing Brazil.
Same weather.
Worse.
I heard.
Casey was freezing. He said he literally told Kevin Wong, if I dig it, bump it over, because it's like chasing a plastic bag in the corner in the wind.
Oh, my God.
He said it was absolutely insane. He said Kevin Wong, though, it was such a joy to play with him. The guy was a complete warrior. And for those guys to win the gold, Casey won his first ever FIVB gold.
Pretty awesome.
His first tournament without Matt. And he got to share the podium with Matt and Nick because those guys got the bronze. Pretty special for him, man. He's been through a lot.
That's pretty unique. You have a partnership breakup, and they both end up on the same podium. And that was a long-term partnership, too. That's no one season, half a season. That's a number of years. What, 8, 9 years?
Yeah, and
like
it's the first time Kevin had won a tournament since 2008 and the first time since Casey had won a tournament since 2008. So for those guys, you know, long-time rivals.
Yeah.
I mean, Casey and Kevin have almost brawled at tournaments. I mean, they have gone at each other. So it's pretty awesome.
Very cool. Very cool.
How'd that? Did it take up enough time?
Yeah, it was good because now I want to hear from Reed, and then we're going to get to Mario Ciccinelli, the promoter of the AVP in Cincy. There it was. The beach volleyball event in Cincy. But first, I wanted to play this from Reed. Reed's been out of the show for a couple of weeks, a few weeks. He'll be back when he gets
him
to Russia. The team
he hates you.
The team is training now. We have had a little bit of an argument, and he'll address some of that. But let's listen to what Reed has to say. It's about 8 minutes. Hang in there. You know Reed. He wants to just hear himself. But much as I would. I might go 10 or 15 minutes if I was just put one of these together. So
what can I do when this happens? Just listen or go
yeah,
pick
you
it
Yeah, you got to listen to what he's
okay.
going to say.
I know.
You can take care of the kids. I'll go get the kids some Fruit Loops or something. All right, so Reed Pretty, here he is.
Hey, what's happening, guys? Definitely miss hanging out in the home court with you. Wish I could be there, but we're busy trying to take on the world and at practice. So more on that a little bit later, but I wanted to weigh in on all the great conversations that we've had here on the Net Live the last couple weeks and maybe bring a little bit of opposing thought to it, at least Barney. And Kevin, you can attest to the fact that had we had our phone conversations recorded the last couple of weeks, now that would have been good radio. Our relationship is literally hanging by a thread at this moment. Pushed any direction, we're going to find ourselves in the octagon going toe-to-toe with each other. But be that as it may, the one thing I'm not going to do is jump on the bandwagon of pointing out one person as the fault of and demise of the AVP. I think that's naive, and at this point, I think it's very clear, at least to me, that the problem is volleyball. The problem is not, be it Billy Berger or Leonard Armato or Nick Lewin. Sure, there's pluses and minuses to each administration, but the bigger issue is how do we sell volleyball? How can volleyball stand on its own 2 feet and not be a subsidized entity? And I think that's really where I would rather put my focus. Now, Nick's not going to get a hall pass from me regarding last week's interview. That was tacky. It was not his best showing. And Nick would agree with me in that if he did one thing wrong, in my opinion, it would be that he told the players and everybody that it was going to be okay. And it turned out to not be okay. But, of course, as somebody that's trying to keep something together and keep something going, that's kind of what he had to say. All too often, I see entities in Europe, club teams, professional teams, whatever, do the opposite. They'll go ahead and carry on with the rest of the season, telling everybody it's going to be fine. No, the money's going to be here tomorrow, only to find out that they're going to shut down, go bankrupt, and start under a new name and screw the next generation of people. So, you know, there's some respect I have to be able to make the hard decision and shut doors with the hope, I think, and there is some hope there, of rekindling something in the near future. What has really caught my attention in the last few weeks with the various people we've had on, the ones that are really at the heart of these issues, Holly McPeak, Jason Hodel, Mike Dodd, Paul Sunderland, now, these are people that have been around for a long time and really have their finger on the pulse of what's going on. There's a consistent theme that I've heard and that you now heard in, as we made that little remix of their past interviews, and that is the idea that the business model needs to take a new direction, needs to shift. There needs to be a new sort of model under which the AVP operates. And for me, it kind of goes back to kind of what Jason Ring was really pursuing a few years back with the Pro Beach Volleyball Association. I think that he had it, he was really on the right track there. And unfortunately, he lost a little bit of credibility. One, because he was being shot down and character assassinations all over the place from his opposers. But Two, he also kind of made it a personal vendetta, you know, me versus the AVP, and I think there was some credibility lost there. But what he was pursuing, which was organizing the players under one voice, one umbrella, was the right move, and it was kind of returning to the roots of what the Association of Volleyball Professionals, I think, really was at its inception. The ironic part is that they were, at least according to Wikipedia, they were forming and organizing against promoters, and now here we are, forming and organizing against, quote, the man or corporate America and wanting to go back to the promoters. But there needs to be some balancing effect. And I think the players will service themselves well and the sport well to be on the same page. With that said, I really like what Holly suggests, in that we pursue a sort of a promoter model. There's not tons of overhead. Maybe the AVP is something that we that the players sort of license out as a name, and that enables different markets to pick up different sponsors. And there's not this big closed category and a tour per se. It's a bunch of one-off events that together form a really nice season. And maybe that partnering with USAV, partnering with the FIVB, maybe we can get back to a dozen or so tournaments that are really hitting each market very specifically and individually. And yet the whole community itself, as a giant marketing engine, you know, with the players able to sell sponsorships themselves, wear sponsors, the sponsors are able to sponsor the event and have touches with the fans. And, of course, the fans are able to watch high-level volleyball right there in their hometown and enjoy just a great environment. And like Mike Dodd said, a nice festival feel. I like that, and I really believe that we don't service ourselves well, and we waste energy when we try to just, you know, sit around and point fingers at this person or that poor person. The bigger issue in my mind is, how do we make volleyball sell on its own? My last thought is just in kind of reaction to just observing. Again, I'm not going to pretend to think that I know what's happening behind the closed doors, because I don't. But it seems as though we've kind of got into this economy where the fix and flip model works in a lot of different areas, or it did work. It worked in real estate and, of course, in the corporate world to buy a depressed corporation to try to fix it and add value to it and then resell it for a profit was something that was happening. I think that AVP kind of got sucked into those types of business models. But as I've already said, I don't think volleyball is an easy sell, and it hasn't proven that it can sell. And so I think that particular model is something that we definitely need to avoid in the future. The idea that you know, we're going to sell at this depressed value, and that this entity who really has no connection to volleyball whatsoever, they're just seeing a depressed corporation and they want to come in and flip it. I think we want to avoid that. But at the same time, I'm not going to be the one pointing fingers at these people like Leonard, like Nick, who have their own skin in the game, their own money on the line, trying to put money into our sport. Sure, have they made mistakes? For sure. Who hasn't? We've all made mistakes. Hopefully we can learn from where these guys, you know, the contributions that they've made and the errors that they've made as well. Hopefully we can learn from them and move forward. But I think as a community, we got to figure out how can we stand on our own two feet. Good, bad, or indifferent, those are my thoughts. I'm sure Barney's going to try to light me up for some unfounded love for Nick Lewin, and I won't be there to defend myself. Geeter, why don't you go ahead and speak on my behalf in that vein.
Well, we'll get him. We'll get him.
Update on the national team. We're training hard. We're entering into week six of an eight-week training phase right before the World Championships, and we've gotten lots of emails asking why we've gone dark. I don't think it was a specific thing that our teams had to do, but we've just really put our heads down and tried to get on the same page as a staff, as a player group, and try to see how hard we can work and how many gains we can make before these World Championships. So, you know, we've got three more weeks. And one thing I want to highlight is that the FIVB has really stepped up their TV exposure via online streaming. And so I anticipate these World Championships being the most accessible that we've ever had. So stay tuned via USAVolleyball.org here on the net live. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and we'll try to keep you informed as to when and where you can watch these matches. So, hey, miss you guys. Hope to see you soon. Keep up all the good work.
There you go. Read pretty.
And he's about to be a dad, so that was pretty good. He took the time.
That's lengthy. That's lengthy right there. And, yeah, we need to light him up about his love of Nick Lewin.
He talked to you about going to the Octagon.
Yeah. You know why? Because
that would be awesome.
Because he's got a Team Nick shirt with Nick's face faded like a vampire on his shirt. It's really nice stuff.
This is where we need him here, and we need to listen with him.
That's
so
right.
He can tell us.
Yeah, what he didn't like about
what
the
he didn't like about him.
Because I think we gave Nick a fair shake, personally. I don't think Nick really got it too badly. But, hey, Reed did reference a little mashup we've done of some of the guests we've had talking about the AVP model, and I want to get back to that. We will get back to it later in the show. Talking about what's the future model for volleyball. We're going to move on from dissecting who was at fault. Doesn't matter. It's over. We've got to move on to what the future will look like.
One thing I love that Reed pointed out, and he did this in an email as well, is we need to learn from the good contributions from the Billy Burgers, Leonard Armato,
yeah,
Nick Lewin, and where we made errors and move on to the future. Because right now there's so much blame game. Everyone trying to figure out the past. We got to figure out what's going to work. And I think Reed makes a great point there.
I think a gentleman who's a big part of it is going to be on our show right now.
Mario Ciccinelli is the Cincinnati promoter. We started going to Cincinnati back in 2005, and we did the tournament at the Lindner Tennis Center. And it really is Mario's partner, Bob Slattery. They have done a first-class event for the past 6 years. It's a favorite stop for the players because they're treated with first class. The fans are phenomenal. I mean, we get 10,000 to 15,000 people there for the finals. It's off the hook. And this year, we're doing it at a new venue, Hohana Beach. Mario and Bob were able to still do this tournament, even though the AVP ceased operations two Fridays ago. Mario, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, guys. Good to hear you, Geeter. And Barney, I haven't met you yet, but hello to you.
Thanks, Mario. Thanks for being here on the show. Hopefully we will meet at some point soon.
I hope so. You know, I have to tell you, when you said you had Reed coming on, I thought it was the big Hawaiian, Reed Sanahara, who's out. I don't know if you guys know or not, but he's got his UC girls team. They're ranked supposedly to win the Big East, and I think in the top 20 this fall. But they're out in California right now playing some college teams. And I think his last match is today against UC Santa Barbara, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Reed has done a phenomenal job there, and we always hope to see him when he comes into town. Mario, when news hit that the AVP was stopping operations a couple Fridays ago, what did that mean to you and Bob and the people of Cincinnati, and what happened from that point on?
Well, a lot of sleepless nights, no days off. But, you know, we looked at it as a challenge, as I think we do our event every year, you know. Having it for 5 years, like you said, Geeter, up the Lindner Family Tennis Center, became very familiar with the surroundings and what we had at stake. And, you know, this year making the move to Hohana Beach, and actually erecting a volley bar, so you call it, so it would be replicable throughout the country. And I'm excited to see the fans and especially all you guys come in and take a look at this thing and say, this is the future, and the future is HB and Sin C is the way we're calling it. But, you know, my first goal was with the communication with the players to say, hey, even though they've ceased operations, we're still having an event. I need you to come. So having to work with all the players, the top players, to get them signed to come to the event, and luckily they've had great experiences here, Geeter, and you talked about that, and I sure do appreciate it. That's been our business model throughout. I'm a firm believer that if you take care of the players in any sport, they will support you 150%, and that's what they've done this year. You know, they could have said, nope, there's no AVP, we don't care about your tournament, yada yada yada, but at the end they're like, Mario, not only are we coming, but how can we help you? And that is, to me, everything. And that's what I've always felt strongly about, is the AVP is the players, you know, the personalities, the quality, the fact that they're educated, they're the athleticism, and the fact that they'll sign every autograph, kiss every baby, take every picture. These people in Cincinnati, Geeter, I can't tell you, the phone's off the hook, man. It's going to be rocking, as I told you the other day. I have no doubt that this will be one heck of a show, and the fact that we've got all the top players on both the men's and women's side. I don't know if this lineup, Geeter, honestly, and Barney, I don't know if this lineup will be ever together again when you start looking at it. And the fact that Carrie's going to play here first, a lot of people want to come out and see her and support her.
Mario, you mentioned the way the players behave. Have you seen any shift in that over the last 6 years, or has it taken a turn now that the players are in a position where they don't have a tour? Are they more cooperative or less cooperative, or do you think it's always been a great athlete to deal with?
You know, Barney, great athlete, and that's no bull, man. That is, honestly, when I met Geeter, everybody comes into town, and like they're, you know, we try to put them on a pedestal because we feel that the tour is the players. You know, the feeling that they're marketable, that they're, you know, people will talk to them, and they'll stop and talk to them. I mean, that's what's great about the sport at the pro level. And I've told so many people about that. We get so many notes after the tournament. Mario, thanks for introducing me to Carrie. Thanks for having some of the players come by the tent, you know. And it doesn't have to be a Carrie or a Misty, you know, or April or Jen or Todd and Phil. I mean, guys, you know, Furby. I mean, Jesus Christ, every time he comes into town, man, he's like, Mario, who do I need to talk to? What can I do, you know? Ed's the same way, Ryan, all these guys, and the girls the same way, Triple J and Annette, you know, it's like, hey, what can we do for you? And we try to, you know, reciprocate by making their experience here the best they've ever had.
Mario, a lot has been talked about the business model and what will work. Tell us about the promoter model and how that's going for you now.
Well, it's going well. And here's what I would say about that, Gator. It's a good question. Here's what I'd say about it. You know, we're able to use now local companies to put our event together. You know, when the AVP was in operation, they would bring in the bleachers and the sound system and all that kind of stuff, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, you know, we're able to use local sponsors. You know, we've got a local guy. We're building our stadium. It's a 2,000-seat intimate stadium for center court, okay? Our sound systems, everything that we do is all local. We have local sponsors that have stepped up, you know, Kroger, Wellington Orthopedic Sports Medicine, Time Warner Cable, Stagnaro Distributing. We have an official beer sponsor this year that we've, you know, haven't been able to do. So we've been able to go out in the local community and short notice this year, no doubt, but you have local sponsors that say, hey, we know what you're under, we'll help you out type of thing. And, you know, that coupled with the good ticket sales that, you know, we should be okay this year. It's going to be tight. But, you know, it's been more work. I'm not going to deny that. But I think at the end of the day, people will not miss a beat with this show versus the other show.
Mario, you've been through a lot of regimes. You were there kind of at the height of our turnaround in 2005, 2006, and then through the new management. Can you tell us just some of the things you think have gone on in terms of what's worked and what hasn't worked and why we got to this point?
Well, I think on the, you know, and again, a promoter side, I'm looking at it from the promoter. You know, communication has been up and down over the years. You know, there's times where you have great communication, then there's times where you don't have great communication. And I think that's more of the people that are involved versus the position itself, you know, that someone may be in, you know. But I think when we've been let alone to do our own thing, we know the local market, you know. Who knows better than us for the greater Cincinnati, you know, area? And we're just not Cincinnati. People don't quite understand that we're Southeast Indiana, we're Northern Kentucky. So we pull from a lot of different areas. We know the market. We run businesses in those markets besides our event marketing business. So we do have our finger on the pulse. And when organizations and regimes have kind of come and gone, the ones that have let us do our own thing and made it happen, that's been our greatest success, is through that. And I will tell you, that's what we're experiencing this year. And, you know, it's been very successful so far.
You're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to Mario Ciccinelli, promoter for the beach volleyball event in Cincinnati. Mario, you've talked a lot about the potential for the future and AVP as a players organization. Do you think that's going to come back as a players organization of some kind, whether named AVP or not, and they're going to negotiate separately with you as a promoter for the Cincy event, or if you run another event or other promoters like you throughout the country?
Well, you know, my personal thoughts are I do believe there's going to be some company that comes in and takes over the AVP. You know, whether they keep the AVP or not, you know, there's a lot of great sports, and I mean great sports management companies out there that have dabbled in sports or not even dabbled, but been involved with the sporting. You know, I think of one, you know, off the top of my hand, Mandalay, you know, Entertainment. I mean, these guys got their finger on the pulse. They're in minor league baseball. They're in motion pictures. They own Mandalay Bay. You know, they're an entertainment company, and they also, you know, are involved in sports, minor league baseball. And you know, I've been to some of their minor league ballparks and seen what the production that they do. And I got to tell you, it's first class. And if you could have a group of players organized with a company like that, and I know there's other ones besides Mandalay, but to me that would be a good fit. And to not, you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars renting out a beach, you know, whether it be in SoCal or whether it be in Florida. There are so many great places across the Midwest that want a tour stop, that have a promoter or could get a promoter to put it together and give it that local aspect. The players show up, they're treated well. I don't look as myself as a genius. No way. I'm just a schmo from, you know, Cleveland, Ohio originally. But at the end of the day, it's not that difficult to figure out this model and to make it work like we have going into our 6 years. You know, to me it's doable. But I do believe, you know, if my crystal ball is always foggy, but you know, if it was a little clearer, I'd say I think a group may come in and get together with the players and do something similar to that.
Well, take us from theory to reality then. Tell us about how the player selections were made for your tournament and how those negotiations went with the different players and getting them to come.
Well, you know, what we did is, it's you know, the name of the event is the 2010 Pro Beach Volleyball Players Championship. We had that name picked out, you know, once we started doing everything. We said we're all about the players, and I mentioned that earlier. We took a look at, you know, where everybody was, and I knew we would come up with conflicts. You got people, you know, Kevin Wong had already committed to something else, you know. He's thinking we didn't have a tour. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Casey and Wong, you know, just won in Holland, Gita, that you were talking about. I mean, it's unbelievable. I'm so glad Casey's coming in. I can't wait to give him a hug and say, good job, man. That was awesome. And I did see how they got there, too. But some of the players had commitments, prior commitments already, which ended up breaking up a few teams that, you know, they would do that. We really, you know, invited the people that we thought, A, had really done a great job for us over the 5 years, you know. We took a look at where they were in the standings. It wasn't all based on that whatsoever. It was the ones that we thought between who could play and who had other commitments, standings, and the ones that, you know, kind of did stuff for us over the years at this event. So at the end of the day, we want it to be about, you know, the players and the fans. And, you know, fans dictate a lot, too. You know, they'll tell you who they like and who they don't like. And we get emails and, you know, voicemails and texts and everything from fans. You know, oh, we need to bring this person. So we kind of all sat down and said, this is how we will make this work this year. And like I said, fortunately, you know, I'm looking at the lineup now. It's solid top to bottom, 8 teams on the men's and 8 teams on the women's. And not only gold medalists, but, you know, the world champs and, you know, Jen and April. And Rachel's got a, you know, playing with Priscilla Lima. The fact that Casey's playing with Jake Gibb, I mean, that's, I can't wait to see that team. That could be my pick of the weekend.
Hey, Mario, last thing. Tell us where Hahana Beach is and what time the tournament's going to be and how people can get there.
Sounds great. 7605 Worcester Pike in Cincinnati. Great area right outside of Marymount. It's called Columbia Township. It is the Hahana Beach itself is a 12 months a year bar restaurant with a Hawaiian theme, holds about 300 people. Next to it is the sand volleyball courts. This year we're playing with center court plus one practice court. So all the matches with this kind of format will be on center court. So you're going to see everything right there. Let's see, hahanabeach.com, HAHANABeach.com has all the information. We start with a smaller qualifier on Thursday afternoon, and then the main draw starts on Friday at 9:30. We're Friday all day, night and day and night sessions, which we've got the lights set. Saturday is our day and night session, and then Sunday, of course, is the semis and finals. And, you know, as Geeter, you've been here, man. You know how our night sessions are. You put them up against anybody, and
yep.
It Saturday night will be one rockin' house. And, you know, I know a lot of people listen to you from all over. You want to see a great lineup, and all these players come in for, like I said, what may be the last time for this good group of players to be in a tournament. I hope not, but Cincinnati's the place to be this weekend.
Mario Ciccanelli is the promoter and one of the men responsible for the Cincinnati Volleyball Players Championship coming up this weekend. Mario, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show. We wish you the best with this weekend and the future. We hope you're a part of the solution of keeping beach volleyball in the United States.
Hats off to both of you, Barney and Geeter. Great show. Keep up the
thanks,
good
Mario.
Work, too. Thank you.
Right. Thanks for coming on,
we'll
man.
Thank you, Mario. Hey, good stuff from Mario. I think he's, like you say, he's not a rocket scientist, as he put it, but he's a guy who's gotten it done. You know, he's done the things to make a successful event possible, and I hope that continues. It sounds to me like that's going to be something that, because he has the relationships with the players and with the promoters and with the sponsors, that's something that's going to continue to thrive and be around no matter if there is another group that buys the AVP or some other form of the beach volleyball circuit coming around.
And they love him on the chat board.
Good.
Yeah.
They should. Hey, I want to play this because we had Mario.
Yep.
We had Reed reference it.
Yep.
We're going to play a few highlights from people that we've had on the show here. We had Paul Sunderland. We've had Holly McPeak. We've had Mike Dodd on the show recently talking about just this subject. What does the future look like? And so we're going to play that now. Here they are talking about the future of beach volleyball in the United States.
Holly, switching gears, the AVP closing their doors 2 Fridays ago. What were your initial thoughts on that?
To be honest with you, I thought prior to the season they were going to be in trouble. They did not have a title sponsor. Thank goodness for Leverage Agency and Ben Sterner. He came in with Nivea and basically saved the day, but that was last minute. And AVP undersold a lot of sponsorships, and they weren't selling. And in this economy, I know it's tough, but you have to sell sponsorships to make it go. And they still had a full schedule. They started a Young Guns tour. They had all these qualifier tours. I mean, they bit off more than they could chew. And so, yes, prior to the season, I thought there were going to be problems.
Do you think there will be beach volleyball in the United States next year? And if so,
yes,
at what level?
I think it's going to be in a whole different form, and I think it's time for it to be in a whole different form. As far as the AVP goes, I don't know. I just think new management, new ownership there would be great. So we could take it in a new direction. Maybe a promoter model where promoters are promoting different events on all over the country, and they get all the rights, including TV, including sponsors, and the AVP becomes, or the players group becomes more of an association that deals with the promoters.
Mike Dodd, you've been around for a long time. You and I have actually worked together for 13 years, but you were part of the glory days. You've seen its ups and downs. A lot has been talked about in this last week about the model and does it work and what do we need to change. And I know you guys were really, really working on slashing things and making it the right model. What is going to work for us, Mike?
You know, the model that worked the best in the earlier days was certainly a model that, first of all, the players were owners of the tour, and I think that has to be an element in the future, that there has to be some type of collective ownership between the players and the tour. I think there needs to be a more ownership all the way around. I think, you know, when it really worked, NBC was more of a partner and was more helpful and involved and created opportunities with the NFL properties and other things. And you know, in the earlier days, Miller Lite was definitely more of a owner and proprietor and took, you know, an active involvement in the tour beyond just a strict, you know, sponsorship type of arrangement. When we were very upfront with the players and told them where we stood after, you know, we found out what was going on as far as the funding from our ownership group that wasn't going to be there, then it came out in the paper. And then, you know, exponentially, people started calling in interested groups. You know, obviously there were the groups that were kind of the bottom feeders that wanted to really kind of take advantage of a wounded prey out there in the water. But there were a lot of really high quality, very, very successful people that had a passion for volleyball. So, you know, I think about those groups and those people, and I think about, you know, a different model. And I envision a tour where the stadium court or the main court and the feature side court are all kind of blended into one big area surrounded by sponsors, and it becomes more of the festival. And I think that model and that direction, and maybe us taking a little bit of wind out of our egos and saying, okay, we're beach volleyball and we are a lifestyle and a great sport, and we can be both, and we should market ourselves as both and create opportunities in that way, like it was at the beginning. At the beginning, we didn't have any lofty ideas that, oh, we're just the best volleyball players in the world. We knew we were a young adult promotion. We knew that, you know, the Cuervos and the beer companies and the people loved us because we appealed to a young adult market. And so why try to be something that you're not? I think in a way, there was a fundamental part of the kind of the modern era of AVP that thought, well, we need to be big time. Everybody kept talking NBA and this and that. And at a certain point, you need to just embrace what you are and then let the opportunities develop from that instead of trying to be something you're not.
Pleasure to work with a legend, Paul Sunderland.
My fondest memories, of course, of the AVP are standing room only crowds, Karch Kirai, Kent Steffes, St. John Smith, Randy Stoklos, Tim Hovland, Mike Dodd, Mike Whitmarsh, among many, many others, Ricky Ludes, John Hanley. So those are my fondest memories. I did the AVP for many years up until and including, you know, sort of the mid-90s. And it was a marvelous experience, just tremendous events. But I also saw some problems starting to arise. The AVP, like so many other minor sports in the country, can't afford to make any mistakes. You cannot make one single mistake with television, with PR, with marketing, with your sponsors. And I saw some huge mistakes being made in the late 90s. And I'm not sure that the AVP was ever able to truly recover. And I think they tried to continue a production and business model that was based on the revenues generated in the 90s, and those just never replicated themselves. And I was there when the AVP alienated Miller Brewing Company and Jose Cuervo. I saw those two companies that had invested millions and millions and millions of dollars and were using beach volleyball as a cornerstone of their summer marketing. I saw them walk away.
There you go. A little mashup of three
Stuff.
Great guests, three people
Stuff.
who've been there. They were there. A
lot of knowledge being dropped.
Yeah, and I think some important notes from that before we move on from the AVP here. I think that the players need skin in the game. That's an important thing. They need to understand how the business works a little bit and need to have some sort of something at risk rather than just taking off the top. That's an interesting thought. And I think a lot of the talk about Miller Lite, about the breakdown of that relationship and the really good days of the AVP. And back at the time, Miller optioned the image of the AVP as an extension of their brand. So they really were concerned with how this entity looked. And you heard Mike Dodd say Miller was much more involved. And the reason for that was their brand. In the summertime, you saw volleyball and Miller Lite. Those were the two things. That was what they chose to do. And you know, you'd like to see them be more involved. And you want to see AVP return to its vibe and realize who they are. I keep hearing that now. Realize who you are. You're beach volleyball. You're not the NFL. You're not tennis. You're not golf. You're beach volleyball. You have to figure out a way to maximize your own vibe instead of replicating a system that exists in another sport.
Ding, 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 ding. Good work.
I'm going to ask you a question instead. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we still have Dave Reed upcoming here on the show. We're going to get back to talking about women's college because I think that's a great topic. Women's college is going to take over the volleyball landscape here with the AVP having gone off the rails. And since he's going to happen, we'll have a report on that. The FIVB will continue to happen. There's still quite a few events going there. But really, women's indoor is going to be a big deal. And we have the men's championship coming up. The men are headed out to Italy for the world championship coming up here in the third week of September. They take off to go to that event. And the women will have that equal event in Japan.
Do you think we're going to lose Dan as a listener once indoor really takes over here in the fall?
For sure.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah, we're done with Dan.
He'll be back in spring, hopefully.
Maybe not.
If
the tour doesn't come back, Dan may not be back.
You know, going off of what you talked about, what Mario talked about, to go back to beach volleyball, but just volleyball in general, you know, Reed talked about volleyball being a tough sell, and if you have the right people in the right markets partnering up with you and selling your brand, it can work.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the one thing about having a promoter event is that they are marketing for you, Barney. They know the market. They're going to the liquor store. They're going to the bars. They're going on the radio. They're the ones getting the newspaper publications. The AVP doesn't have to do that. And that's where I think you can hit a home run.
Well, that's where the AVP is the players, and then you have those promoters.
You okay?
Woo, sorry about that. Yeah. It's live radio. Yeah,
but I agree with you when you say beach volleyball needs to realize who we are.
Yeah.
We're a great lifestyle sport.
Lifestyle sport.
That a lot of people love.
Not a sport. Not by itself. Great sport, but not by itself. It's got a vibe. I think you got to maximize that vibe. I think that vibe is missing on the indoor side. Love indoor volleyball. Like watching it. Think it's a deeper game than beach. I think there's a lot more going on, a lot more interplay and players and matchups and topics to talk about because there's just more people out there and the game is more diverse. But you lack the atmosphere from the beach. I mean, who doesn't like sitting on the beach, a nice day, you know, having a drink, be out there with the family. It's a wonderful summer afternoon, and you're watching a fun sport and being part of a great vibe with some great music, you know, attractive players, a fun event.
Great athletes, too,
players.
And they're great athletes. They don't just look good, but,
yeah,
you know, the athleticism out there when you're up close and you're at an event is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people watch Phil Dalhauser and go, I could stop him. A lot of people watch Phil Dalhauser and go, whoa.
Exactly.
That dude's gnarly. All right, well, this has been a show full of great guests, and I hope that our next gentleman continues that. We're going to jump off on the College Volleyball Weekly. We here at the NetLife have partnered with the American Volleyball Coaches Association to present to you a report on each week on the world of women's college volleyball, and we'll continue that on into the men's season when that starts. But it's just underway this past week, and we want to welcome into the show for the very first time a gentleman who has written for ESPN.com at times and works at Colorado College there in Colorado Springs, who should be an expert on Big Ten and Big 12 for us and a great resource here on the Net Live. Dave Reed, welcome to the Net Live.
Well, great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, we appreciate you being here, and sorry we missed you last week. A little bit of a technical snafu back and forth between the two of us, but we got you in the show now, and give us a few thoughts on what you saw coming in and now what's going on in this past weekend.
Well, I think coming in, one of the big stories was whether or not Penn State was going to continue at the same level of play that they had after losing Megan Hodge and Lisa Glass to the national team. And, you know, they really didn't have a lot of competition this past week, but they did extend their overall winning streak to 105 matches. And, you know, Penn State has some questions this year. Who was going to fill in for Alicia Glass and who was going to fill in for Megan? And then all of a sudden, Darcy Dorton gets hurt. And so they had an additional question going into this weekend. So I think Russ Rose kind of took it easy on him a little bit. They went down to North Carolina and beat three teams that they should beat relatively easily, and they took care of business.
Well, it's an interesting thought there. We just talked to Kevin Hambley from University of Illinois, and he takes his team right out of the gate and goes against some of the best competition around the country, and now you have Penn State kind of trying to ramp up. It's a little bit different coaching philosophy.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's a reflection of how comfortable you are with the players that you have coming back. And for Penn State, their big question was really going to be who was going to run the offense. And right now it looks like it's going to be Kristen Carpenter. She got the three starts this year as the returning player. But, you know, from what I understand, Mackenzie Moidell is looking good, and she might be right in the mix later on in the year. And if Russ really wants to go, you know, with the 6-2 offense, I'm sure she'll get a lot of playing time. And, you know, it's funny because Alicia Glass was not a highly recruited setter when she came in, but they really worked with her, and over 4 years, you know, now you've seen what she's become. You know, she goes out to the Grand Prix and becomes, you know, the best setter of the tournament. So, you know, Russ really does have a way of working with players and bringing them along.
Hey, Dave, it's Geeter. I know it's early to say, but maybe is this the year finally that in Illinois or Minnesota breaks through and finally beats Penn State?
You know, it really does look like they've got a good chance. You know, Kevin and Mike really have good teams coming back. You know, they had good runs in the tournament last year. You know, they didn't lose a whole lot, and they were competitive with Penn State. So, I think this is a year that it's wide open, and I'm going to go out on the limb and say Penn State is going to lose a match this year.
I mean, it hasn't happened in, 3 years?
Yeah, you know, that's incredible.
It really is. It's one of the great streaks in all of sports, no matter what the gender. Moving to the Big 12 real quick. Texas ranked third, I believe, or fourth in the country. They lost Bailey Webster, and they do have a freshman center, Hannah Allison. But Kevin Hambley said about a half an hour ago that he still thinks that they're the most athletic team in the country. But no one's really talking about them, big picture, national championship. What do you think?
I think they're right in it. You know, ever since Jarrett went from USC over to Texas, I mean, he's recruited just like he did with the Trojans. And I think it's 4 or 5 years in a row that Texas has had a top five class coming in. And, you know, it might take a little bit of time to develop, but, you know, you've got to replace Destiny Hooker. You've got to replace Ashley Engel. And I think once they kind of figure out, you know, what's going on, who's playing where, get comfortable with each other, you know, I think they're going to be really tough to beat. You know, and obviously, you know, with Nebraska losing to Florida, you know, it shows you that there is, you know, Nebraska can be beat. So let's see what goes on the rest of the year.
Yeah, Dave, I was going to ask you that. Did you think it was a down weekend for the Big 12? Iowa State lost and lost one of their best players in Rachel Hockaday.
Boy, that's right. And, you know, I'm not going to say it was a down weekend for them because I think Florida wasn't getting the attention they deserved coming back in. You know, they only lost one player. They've got five starters and their libero back. And they've got one of the great players in the country with Kelly Murphy. You know, she is a triple threat anytime she's on the court. And, you know, she had a triple-double against the Huskers. And if it wasn't for her, they really wouldn't have won the match. So I'm not going to get down on the Big 12 right now, you know, but I think it's a three-team race with Texas and Nebraska on top. Iowa State a distant third, only because Iowa State's the team without the setter. They lost Kaylee Manns from last year, you know, and Christy Johnson did a great job of bringing her along. And, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time to get that back.
Dave, do you have a dark horse in the Big Ten or Big 12 that you think may make some waves that really aren't on people's radar right now?
Boy, you know, Oklahoma, I think Santiago Restrepo does a really nice job there. You know, they had a really tough year last year when he lost his son in the middle of the season. And, you know, I think that team really has a lot of, you know, camaraderie where, you know, teams got to like each other. They've got to play together to really, you know, take that next step up, you know, to compete with the Stanfords and the Texas and the Nebraskas. And I think they could do that, but, you know, things really have to go their way too.
Hey, Dave, is it safe to say that this year, for the first time in probably 3 to 4 years or maybe even more, it is wide open when you add the teams from the Pac-10 and the Big 12, and you mentioned Florida and of course, the Big 10. I mean, it just seems like right now there's 10 teams out there that can probably win it.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it could even go past 10. You know, you get down to even California, who was number 11 going into the season. You know, Kentucky's pretty decent. Craig Skinner's done a nice job since he left Nebraska and took over the Wildcats. You know, I think Mike Seeley's going to do a great job at UCLA. And Colorado State's a good team. So, you know, you're right. It's so wide open this year. I think it's going to be exciting for the fans. And I don't think it's going to be one of these seasons where a lot of teams run the table and maybe just have one or two losses. They could all have 3 or 4, and who knows?
Give us some of the storylines to watch or some of the upcoming topics you see around the conferences there.
You know, one of the really good stories is the University of Dayton, who, I don't know if you know this, but they lost their setter in a plane crash over the off season, and then Jessica Yans comes in, you know, who went from Penn State to Nebraska and, you know, kind of got out of the game for personal reasons. But, you know, when you can pick up a setter like that, you don't miss a beat. And they won 3 matches this weekend, including the win over Arizona State. So they started off really well. I think Hawaii is going to be a fun team to watch. They really had a great weekend last week, you know, beating San Diego and UCLA right out of the gate. And I think the Gators are going to be fun to watch this year.
You're listening to NetLive here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're in the middle of the American Volleyball Coaches Association College Volleyball Weekly, talking to our correspondent Dave Reed from Colorado. Dave, talk to us a little bit more about the Big Ten and some of the teams there. We just talked to Kevin Hambley. He's very positive about Illinois and their chances this year, 26-6 last season, and looking for better things this year.
You know, in the Big Ten, there's probably 3 or 4 teams that are really, you know, going to be at the top, I think, when it all is said and done. You know, Penn State's going to be up there, Illinois, Minnesota, and then you've got 2 teams that are on the cusp of getting back there toward the top, and that's Wisconsin and Ohio State. I think Pete Waite's had a good recruiting year, and he could be one of the the Badgers could be one of the teams that kind of threatened to break into the top 3. And, you know, that's just a conference that will probably go, you know, 5 to 6 teams in the tournament again, just because they're that strong. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Michigan. They've lost a couple of players from last year. Their outside hitter from Brazil is gone. And, you know, they lost to Toledo this year at the Toledo – or this past weekend at the Toledo tournament. So they might need a little bit of time to get it back together again.
Last question here. Who do you think has the best home court advantage in Big 12 or Big 10?
Oh, you know, without a doubt, it's got to be Nebraska. Anybody that's ever been there, it's such an amazing experience to have the entire, you know, 4,500 people in sync with what's going on. And it's intimidating, but it's a very positive experience, too. You know, and you can't get away from talking about the Big Ten without saying Huff Hall at Illinois. I mean, that is a crazy place. And a lot of times I don't think the Illinois fans get the credit they deserve for being really into the game. And, you know, I think Kevin's got a great crowd, and that's one of the reasons he could do well this year.
Yeah, Kevin had mentioned going to Texas this weekend. I think that's one that everyone in the country is looking forward to, because that's a great atmosphere there as well.
Yeah, Gregory Gym's just a really crazy place to play. I've been there once, and, you know, I was surprised that the team I was with came out of there with a win, but it was still a lot of fun to be there.
Well, Dave, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the Net Live. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, hopefully, with that big matchup, Illinois at Texas. That seems to be the one to watch.
Yeah, you know what? And there are quite a few next week, too. California at San Diego. Colorado State at Florida. Colorado State beat Florida last year. I know Mary Wise's team is going to be wanting to get back at them. And then on Sunday, USC at Hawaii. That should be a great match, too.
Yeah, that's going to be a great one right there.
Yeah,
Hawaii.
Some great tournaments. Early season tournaments are the best, because you get a lot of up and coming teams that get a shot at the traditional powers, but you've also get a lot of top ranked teams going head to head. So it should be an exciting weekend.
Dave, that following weekend you have that Nebraska, you have Illinois and Dayton both there, and they all have to play each other. So that's going to be
right. You know, and that's a good chance for Dayton to really see what they're made of. And they're 2-1 against Illinois over the last 3 years, so that's kind of an interesting stat for them. And then not only that, then you've got Texas, Stanford, Penn State going to Florida for a tournament the following weekend. So that'll definitely give us a better idea of how good Penn State really is.
Dave, give us one last thing before you go. Where are some good sites for fans to go to get information on the NCAA college game?
Well, you know, I would start, if you want a lot of inside information, the NCAA site's gotten really good. Bo Rittenborn does a blog each week that's really a nice thing to follow. You know, you can also go to the SIDs at the major schools are doing a great job following volleyball now. You know, once they've got somebody devoted to covering the college game, you know, they have all kinds of inside information that you can go to. You know, and then check with ESPN.com. I've got to give myself a plug and get in there and read. And we're going to try and mention some more teams this year than just having feature stories.
Very good. Well, Dave Reed of ESPN.com, thank you very much for taking the time to be here on the show. We look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Great. Have a great week. Thanks so much for having me on.
Great job, Dave.
Okay.
Good job.
Bye.
By the way, he knows his stuff.
Absolutely.
That was impressive.
Absolutely, Dave is on top of it.
Dave
not
coming in, we
got
Holly McPeak coming in for the Pac-10. We're set.
Yeah, the stuff now and the history. You know, you can tell these guys, Holly or Dave, have been following the game for a long time. They know all the players, all the names. Really good stuff.
It can do the job for us, which is fantastic.
Yeah, because
throw them some softballs and let them hit out of the park.
I've got motocross to ride. You know,
you do, and flag football to coach.
Actually, don't ride.
And Friday night football for me this week. It's going to be my first high school game of the year, starting my fifth season. I'm excited.
We got you and myself in the booth one night.
Just doing a game.
Yeah, just doing it for fun.
Into the tape recorder like Marlo used to do.
Recorder, but we'll also just do it over the PA there. Fans get a thrill out of flag football.
Great.
They would love that. They would absolutely love that. All right, we're going to have a little CrossFit commercial. We'll be right back. Hey, tell you what, get your calls ready.
Well, we do too. CrossFit South Bay is an elite strength and conditioning facility with a no-gimmick approach to fitness. The CrossFit program will have you running, jumping, lifting, climbing, and moving in dynamic and powerful ways. There are no machines, ellipticals, TVs, or mirrors. We train everyone from professional and collegiate athletes to soccer moms and retired teachers. With an average class size of 10, you get personal coaching and training. We sweat together, get fit together, and have a darn good time doing it. From beginners to weekend warriors to professional athletes, CrossFit South Bay is for anyone wanting to be in the best shape of their life. Visit us online at www.crossfitsouthbay.com and mention the Net Live for your 15% discount on any of our membership packages.
All right. I love to hear intern Alex. You know, we mentioned her earlier in the show.
Good to hear from her.
She was Atlantic Sun Conference Player of the Week this week with her performance.
So much good karma for being with us this summer.
That's right. That's right. It's all our influence.
There's no
question.
Well,
maybe you. I mean, did you coach her at all? You should have just coached her.
I did, she'd have won a national championship. So.
You're like the Midas of coaching. Yeah. Everything you touch turns to gold. Hey, 347-677-1525. I want you to get in the show now. If you want to win a Mikasa Setter's Ball, if you want to win that, have it shipped to your door. We'll have it out to you this week, and you'll be using it by the weekend, getting better because of us. Call in now. We're going to have you answer some questions. Listen, here's what you have to do now. You don't have to get three right in a row. You have to get three of four. You get one, and you can make it. Okay, three of four, and you can win the Mikasa Setter's Ball. We really have some easy questions here. The ball's there for the taking, so give us a call. 347-677-1525. Get in the queue right now. I mean, there's a bunch of people listening live. We know you're out there. Come on and get into the show. So, Dieter, what are we looking at this next week? What do you have going? You got your football going?
I have a red eye flight after high school football that I'm nervous about making.
Okay.
11:10 flight to Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Land at 6:20, and I'm on at 9 a.m. I am going to announce this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and then I fly back Sunday night. So next Monday I'll have a good report for you. Hopefully we can get Todd Rogers in here maybe too. I want to talk to Todd about the future and what he thinks, and obviously about the great season that they've had. They've won 9 of 12 golds on the FIVB and 5 for 5 on the AVP. So
it's something else.
Impressive. So I'd love to get Todd.
They could be the final ever champions for the AVP.
I spent a lot of time in the car going from Chicago to Bradford Beach, up and back with Carrie, Rachel, and Todd, and Al Lau. And, of course, you know, the dominant conversation was the future of the tour and what can happen. So I'd love to have Todd on here and share his thoughts.
You know, what's funny to me is it's still the same group rolling around. It's like the AVP has dissolved, but you're still doing announcing. You're still going to the event.
Still a traveling circle.
Al Lau is still traveling around with players.
Yep. Dave Culpepper was still there doing all that, setting up and taking down the courts. Instead of 9 crew members, it was just Dave.
Nice. That's good. Well, the office personnel. I wonder what ever happened to Hans Stolfus.
Still tweeting.
Yeah, still tweeting.
Still blogging.
Hanging out at Starbucks more.
Threw out your name.
Again?
In the send-off article.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
The end of the AVP featured the Net Live and a faux quote. Yeah.
Love that.
That was good stuff. Nobody wants this Setter's Ball. 347-677-1525. It's been a big show so far. Talk to Kevin Hambly from the University of Illinois. He's coming off a 26-6 season, entering his second year. Mario Ciccinelli, promoter for the beach volleyball event going to happen in Cincy. It's going to go off again, it sounds like. Really good stuff. Talk to Dave Reed from ESPN.com as part of the AVCA College Volleyball Weekly feature here on the show. And, of course, mentioned Women's Grand Prix. We're going to get at least one player next week from the Grand Prix as the women took down the Grand Prix. Final round in Ningbo, China, where I've actually been. Ningbo, China, won the final round. It was a round-robin format, 6 teams to the final. United States going undefeated and taking down the championship. Quite an accomplishment for a team that really last year struggled with a lot of young players, added a couple of veterans, a couple of young players have come up, and they are, I think, Dieter, you hit it ahead of schedule.
We talked to Kevin Hambly about that. It's when you can get those great veteran players that have taken steps and are at a certain point where they're really ready to be at their best, as Hugh McCutchen has told you, 8 years in or so, and then you bring in some new blood, new fire, athleticism. Maybe you get that right combination.
I want to touch on an interesting scoring thing here, but 347-677-1525. Give us a call now. Win this Setter's Ball. Easy trivia today, boys and girls. Really easy stuff. But I want to touch about the scoring system in the finals.
Please.
The round-robin tournaments, you're going to play 5 matches. It's done on your points from those matches. So you get 3 points for a win. If you win 3-0 or if you win 3-1, you get 3 points, right?
Okay.
If you win 3-2, you get 2 points. And the losing team from that 3-2 match gets 1 point. Now, this is interesting because going into the final match, the United States had already defeated everyone in the tournament, played 4 matches, including defeating world number 1 Brazil. Going into the final round, United States to face Japan. Who's playing well, had defeated Brazil, had given other people a lot of trouble. Japan played extremely well, and hopefully for volleyball, they're on the way back up. But this set up a scenario where the United States could go and have one match lost. If they lost to Japan, they'd lose one match. And Brazil, with 2 losses, if they had won their final match, would have been ahead of the United States. Would have taken down Grand Prix.
I don't like that,
despite the head-to-head.
A win's a win.
And despite having a worse record. Now, it didn't happen.
I know, but I'm just saying
that. United States defeated Japan. But a very, very strange thing, and it's done because of the points. The United States playing 5-game matches with Brazil, playing a 5-game match with Poland, and didn't have enough points to secure themselves. If they had a victory, they would win, even if they won 3-2. So it's really an interesting thing, and I know Sunderland gets really angry about it. He does not like that at all.
I don't like it.
It offends his person. It just offends his value system, as he puts it. Because and I don't like it either, because there's no reason your record, if you have a better record, you're the winner. End of story. If you want to use those points as a tiebreaker, I'm okay with that. If you have two teams that are both 4-2, you have identical points, and or you have different points, pardon me, you have identical records, different points, I'm fine with that.
You're putting you're devaluing a win in five, which anyone who's ever played in that at that level, it's remarkable, those five-game matches. And to win one, it should get extra points.
Now, they ask, why was that point system put into place? The answer is because teams, I'm not going to name names, South American, European, are all throwing matches sometimes. They get down 2-0 and just throw it away. Well, we're done. We don't want to exercise anymore with a long tournament. We have a match tomorrow or a match in a couple of days. We have to travel. We're going to throw this and just move on. The thinking was, if you put a point out there, you dangle the carrot a little bit, teams will play harder, try and get that point, try and stay in it. I don't know if that actually works. I mean, if I'm a player, personally, I play all the time as hard as I can.
It you start to play into something where you could have a full, you know, you could have an absolute uproar. Say, United States and Brazil would have tied, and Brazil would have got that win, even though United States beat them head to head.
You know how they would
have spun
it, though.
You could have had a huge.
They had a spun.
A huge problem.
Oh, well, it's the point system. They played better overall. We'd like to award perseverance through the entire tournament. They would have spun it because that's their job to defend what they have.
I like what you said, though.
Meet
halfway in the middle then. If it's a tiebreak situation, you can go to games one.
But the record is number one.
Record is number one.
Point, you can have the points be second. The points awarded for the end. Not points, because it used to be a points ratio of how many points you won in a match versus how many points you lost. But that one is also funny because, for instance, the United States won a match against Poland where they scored 9 fewer points, I believe it was, something close to that, 9 fewer points through the match, but yet they won the match. So then if you're doing it on points ratio, they actually lost the points ratio, but they won the match.
Why are we trying to change things all the time? This goes back from the beginning of time in athletics. A win is a win. You want to win the game no matter how you do it. What do you got
to play to win the game?
Thank you.
Herm Edwards. One of my favorites, a former Eagle. I'm going to love that about him.
I love Hard Knocks, by the way. Off subject.
Good stuff.
It's a great show. You're not watching that as coach?
I don't have HBO.
You could be the Rex Ryan of flag football. I can't imagine you just dropping F-bomb after F-bomb.
You don't know. I might be the Rex Ryan of NFL football. I have an email in my inbox talking about a certain kid from another team.
Who sits in a board? Where are the guys and where does it happen? And can you give me names of the people and when they are meeting and they go, this is a great idea. Let's give you a point if you win a game.
Yeah.
Let's give you 3 points if you go 3. I mean, who's doing this?
I don't know who's doing this.
Find out.
Yeah. A group of guys who has drank too much. And it's late at night.
Because it's now really hitting me, and now I'm pissed for the first time ever on this show.
Yeah.
I'm finally upset.
All right, well, nobody wants this Setters ball, and I'm okay with that. I don't think Jordan's going to be very happy that we can't give away his Mikasa stuff. This really good Mikasa stuff. You know, he's been a great guy for us, Jordan, and the support over there at Mikasa. They're a great volleyball company, and they have been good to us here at the Net Live, and we are excited to offer some of their products. And we'll put it out there next week. Get your phone calls ready. Keeter, you might just be getting really good at setting again after this week.
I would love to take that ball. Write Sport Shack on it and bring it to my club and
get Millie out in the backyard. That's the thing. If you're a club coach, you got to get in here live and win this thing.
Millie's ready.
Get on the air. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's been another big episode of the Net Live. We appreciate you tuning in. It's been a lot of fun. Geeter and I holding it down. We'll be back again next week, not Monday, because we don't work holidays, man.
We don't.
We'll be back next Tuesday.
Tuesday.
With another show here on the Net Live and the volleyballnetwork.com.
Is it just me or were we good today?
It was good.
We bounced back.
And our guests were good. That's even better. Our guests last week, not so much. Yeah, that's right, Reed. I'm talking about Nick Lewin. He stunk last week.
Hope Reed and Barnett in the octagon. Got it.
All right. Be good, people. See ya.